reason I'm asked to speak tonight a little bit is because this is a very special night, because 5 years ago on this day, December 1st, Hannibal first did Mark Twain. I remember meeting him at Concordia, Missouri. How did I meet him? I listened to this guy next door listening to this record over and over again. This record done by a guy named Hal Holbrook, who also does Mark Twain. And my mother warned me that there would be people like that at school. Listen to that kind of stuff. And then one day the record stopped, and I was pretty happy about it. But then Hannibal himself started saying the things over and over again, and I decided to take my mother's advice and avoid him. But I didn't have much chance to do that, because pretty soon he announced to me and several other of us that he was going to do a play where he would be Mark Twain. And I said, yeah, sure, you will. I admired his guts, but I didn't think he'd really go through with it. So I watched as he got everything ready. He got the time set up. He got a place set up. The school was nice enough to give him the attic of the administration building to give this thing. He had to knock a few cobwebs down and put in some 40-watt light bulbs, and it worked out okay. And I watched as he got everything ready. He had to Mark Twain wears white, of course, and Hannibal didn't own any white clothes at all except a dirty white shirt. So he had to borrow some white pants from one guy and white shoes from another. They were too big. He had to stuff some paper in the toes so they'd fit. Oh, a white tie from another guy, white sweater vest. And he went down to the barber shop and borrowed some white hair from a guy who had just got his hair cut. He borrowed some cornstarch from somebody and put it in his hair to make his hair white. And that didn't work good, and he took a shower then afterwards because it stuck to him. And he went through with this, and I was still rather apprehensive. I didn't think it'd work out. And he was a smashing success, and everyone enjoyed him very much. And since that time, he's been going strong. He's done nearly 100 different performances or banquets since that time over the last 5 years. And now is the time for the commercial. I'd like to give you some of the main things he's done, not all 100. He's done some main plays. The next year, in 74 and 75, he decided to edit some of his own material for Mark Twain. And he called them Mark Twain Alive, and another one he called The Trouble Begins at 8. 1976, which is the next year, he decided to branch out some of his writing abilities, and he wrote a bicentennial play for the Fort Wayne Senior College entitled Adam America, which included interpretations of some of the colorful people that come through American history, like Al Jolson, George Cohan, Franklin Roosevelt, and many others. In 76, that same Christmas, he wrote two other one-act plays, which he did. One's called The Personal Recollections of Pastor Joe, and another one entitled Evergreen. In 1977, he wrote another play based on General George Patton, where he portrayed Patton, and he called that Robert Arrive, which is the code name of the military. 1978, he wrote two plays, which you're probably familiar with. He didn't write them. He was Luther here in Pritzlau, where one called Table Talks, and another one he entitled just Luther. And he had two other people help support him with that. And that's all he's done to date, the different things he's done. And he has a couple things in mind for the future, too, always looking ahead. In February this next year, 1979, he has a mystery murder comedy, he calls it, entitled Hassel and Bogus, and that play is going to start rehearsing this month. And then one I'm really looking forward to in March, and I hope everyone can come, is he's going to portray C.S. Lewis as he takes excerpts from this book, Mere Christianity, and his play is entitled Mere Christianity. I hope as many can come to that. And the final one coming up this April is a new drama he's written called The Parable, or he's working on it. If I know Hannibal, he's usually in the process of doing something. It's never done when he starts announcing it. And It's the story of an aging actor's life and his search for real truth. And then he's going on Vicarage and he's coming back and one more long-range plan. He's going to portray the Apostle Paul with a play called On the Road to Damascus. Well, Hannibal's been quite energetic in all of his playwriting and acting. And I enjoy his plays, and many people do, because they're pure entertainment, and also you can learn a little bit about the different personalities that he portrays and what they have to say as they come to life through him. So I hope that this five-year period is just a starting point as he continues to serve both God and his fellow men with his special ability. Thank you.
Thank you for your message, Bunky. On a more serious note, it must be emphasized that tonight is indeed a nostalgic night for Hannibal. It was, of course, 5 years ago today that he first performed Mark Twain before an audience. But although he began only 5 short years ago, Hannibal's interest in theater began as a mere theatrical infant. Quick to deny that he was conceived at a drive-in movie, Hannibal points out his similarity with Mark Twain. Twain came into this world with Halley's Comet, whereas Hannibal came into this world with Halley's M.O. While in the newborn nursery, infant Hannibal entertained the troops with edited crying, dramatic fussing, and of course, filling his diapers with Mark Twain material. His early performances were so well received that this same material fills many of his plays today. As a lad of 10, Hannibal donated his Sunday school offerings to many a box office in St. Louis in order to see the Sunday matinees. The theater management was always happy to see the lad, not so much because he was an aspiring actor, but because he most always ate the bubblegum from beneath the seats. His insatiable taste for theater would bring a lump to many of the throats in the audience as they would watch him groveling about beneath the seats in search of used gum or the ever-coveted juju beads. But needless to say, Hannibal's fascination for the theater matured when he reached high school. Not content to merely watch poor acting, he decided he wanted to participate in it. When he turned 16, he managed to land his first part as a tree in the famed production, It's a Doggy Dog World. From his little-known role as a tree, Hannibal established his roots in theater. I've got to read it, you know. He branched out until December 1st, 1973, when he presented Mark Twain for the first time. Asked why he gave up his role as a tree, in order to don a white wig and a white suit, Hannibal replied, "It's time to turn over a new leaf." And so he began his slow travel down the road from stardom. Hannibal is quick to point out that he has never once taken an acting lesson in his life, and I'm proud to point out his productions prove it. But tonight is indeed a special night for Hannibal for three distinct reasons. First, Hannibal has promised to repeat his favorite Mark Twain material of the past 5 years for those of you who have consistently missed the Twain. Secondly, the anniversary marks the end of Hannibal's performance as Mark Twain, except for 3 further engagements and 100 further farewell performances to be repeated occasionally. Thirdly, tonight is special since Frank Gallagher, our fellow seminarian and artist par excellence, has drawn this fantastic work over there of Mark Twain. Frank readily consented to paint this fine portrait for Hannibal in exchange for Hannibal's Dr. Hummel notes. I think someone got the short end of the stick in that deal. But I'd like Frank to stand up so you can acknowledge the man who did that painting. Frank, here you go. Seriously, Frank really must be commended in this endeavor, since his subject was badly decomposed during the portrait sketches. I also should point out that there is an intermission between the two acts, so Hannibal said, don't go away, I won't be up here longer. Of course, the majority of this brief introduction was the product of a sick mind, but let it be said here and now that all of us who know and appreciate Hannibal Friedrich and his talent, we wish to thank him for his 5 years of his dedication to our entertainment. Without him, we would have had a few less smiles and probably a few more dollars. Thank you, Hannibal, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for your continual support of him. And now I proudly present, in his 5th year, Mark Twain.
Mr. Schubert, I would like to thank you for that introduction. I must confess that I didn't know whether or not I would be able to make it here this evening. To tell you the truth, I was at home with 3 weeks undigested food in a family way. And I had to purge myself until I was delivered. And Mr. Schubert, after your introduction, I've decided I'm going to name it after you. Ladies and gentlemen, if anyone has a just right this evening to feel gratified, to feel proud, it is I who stand before you. The compliment of your attendance here this evening is thoroughly appreciated. Your attendance is appreciated all the more because there was such a widespread, such a determined opposition to my lecturing on this occasion. Pretty much the whole community wrote petitions imploring me not to lecture and to have compassion on a persecuted people. But I resisted, and am here. And I am glad that I am able to address a full house this evening instead of pouring out my cataract of wisdom upon empty davenports and chairs. I do not exactly propose to instruct you this evening, but rather to tell you a good many things which you already know, no doubt. I consider that this will be sufficient apology for making this lecture somewhat didactic. I don't know what didactic means. But it's a good high-sounding word, and I wish to use it. My parents had their first crop of children in Tennessee. I was postponed until Missouri. Missouri was an unknown new state and needed attractions. Now, since I was 7 years old, I have seldom taken a dose of medicine, and I have even seldomer needed one. But up to 7, I lived almost exclusively on medicines. Not because I needed them, for I don't think I did. It was for economy. You see, my father had taken a drugstore for a debt, and this made cod liver oil cheaper than any other breakfast food. We had 9 barrels of it. Lasted me 7 years. Then I was weaned. Why, I was the first Standard Oil Trust. Which was pretty amazing because many years later, H.H. Rogers of Standard Oil fame became one of my dearest and closest friends. I've spent many a weekend at the Rogers mansion, and one time I accidentally packed a 2-volume set of books, a pair of Mr. Rogers' bedroom slippers, and a ham. Well, I took the ham because we used to have one that looked just like it. Someone once said to me, "Your friend Rogers is a good fella. It's a pity his money is tainted." And I said, "Well, it's twice tainted. Taint mine and taint yours." I'm 74 years old, you know. I just turned 74 yesterday, November 30th. And it is the privilege of any person who has gone beyond the 70-year mark to bestow his wisdom upon anyone who will listen. Now, I have just a few rules that I try to follow. I make it a point never to smoke more than one cigar at a time. I have no other restrictions. You know, last year, I came down with a lumbago, and I was confined to bed for several days. And finally, my doctor said to me, he said, "Look here, Clemens, my medicines don't stand a chance. Consider what they have to fight besides the lumbago. Why, you smoke extravagantly. You eat all manner of things that don't agree with each other's company. And you drink 2 hot scotches every night, don't you?" And I said, "Why, yes, I do. But I only drink them as a preventative of toothache." "I've never had the toothache. And I never intend to." He said, "Well, that's all right. But you have to moderate those things." And I said, "I can't do it." He said, "Why not?" And I said, "Because I lack the willpower. I can cut them off entirely, but I cannot moderate them." Well, he said that would answer. So I cut all those things off for 2 days and 2 nights, at the end of which time the lumbago was discouraged and left me. I was a well man again, so I gave thanks and took to these delicacies again. It seemed a good system, so I recommended it to an elderly lady friend of mine. Why, she'd gone down and down to the point where medicines no longer had any helpful effect on her. I told her I could cure her in a week. I said that she must give up smoking and drinking and cussing and eating bad things. And she said, "Why, I can't give up smoking or eating or drinking or cussing because I never done any of those things." So there you have it. She neglected her habits. Why, she was a sinking ship without any freight to throw overboard. Just one or two bad little habits would have saved her. But she was just a moral pauper. I can recall one other time when I was sick. It was when I went out to San Francisco. I arrived there with a cold, a very bad cold. And a woman on the stagecoach told me that I should drink a quart of whiskey as a cure. And when I got to the hotel, the manager told me the same thing. He said, drink a quart of whiskey. Well, that made half a gallon. I drank it. The cold died and I survived. Well, you know, when I went out to San Francisco, I was only 19 years old. And I took the steamboat from St. Louis to St. Joe. And then from St. Joe, I took the stagecoach all the way to California. And the very first day that I was on the stagecoach, I was sitting next to the driver. And he said, I can tell you a most laughable thing indeed, if you'd like to listen to it. Horace Greeley went over these roads once, and when he was leaving Carson City, he told the driver, Hank Monk, that he had an engagement to lecture at Placerville and was very anxious to get through quick. Hank Monk cracked his whip and started off at an awful pace. The coach bounced up and down in such a terrific way that it jolted the buttons off of old Horace's coat and finally shot his head clean through the roof of the stage. Ha ha. Well, Horace Greeley yelled at Hank Monk and begged him to go easier. Said he weren't in as much a hurry as he was a while ago. But Hank Monk said, keep your seat, Horace. I'll get you there on time. And you bet you he did too, what was left of him. A day or two after this, we picked up a Denver man at the crossroads. He was a poet. When he got onto the stage, he began to confide in me. He told me that he had been very, very depressed. And then he showed me some of his poetry, and I could see why. I'd be depressed if I wrote that too. Well, then he told me that he thought that his life was a failure. And I said, I thought it was, too. And then he said he wanted to commit suicide. And I said, all right. He had a preference for a pistol, which was extravagant. We hadn't enough between us to hire a pistol. A fork would have been easier. Well, finally, he decided that he would drown himself. Only we had one problem. You see, we were traveling through the desert, and there weren't any bodies of water big enough to drown oneself in. He said he would wait for the Carson River. But when we got there, he was disappointed because the Carson River isn't a river. It's nothing but a moist ditch. Well, if it was my river, I wouldn't leave outdoors night. Any dog might come along and lap it up. So he waited till we got to San Francisco. And then he had an entire ocean to drown himself in. But when we got down to the beach, I went along to make sure that the thing was done right. Something most romantic happened. There came in across that beach something that had been on its way for years. It rolled in across that broad Pacific with a message that was full of meaning for that poor poet. It was a life preserver. But then I had an idea. I said, why don't we pawn the life preserver and get a revolver? Well, the pawnbroker gave us an old Derringer with a bullet as big as a hickory nut. And it was a terrible moment when my friend placed that gun to his head. And then I said, oh, go ahead and shoot, will you? And he did. And the bullet cleaned out all the gray matter in his brain. And it also carried away the poetic faculty. And now this fellow's a member of Congress. But anyway, I got a little bit ahead of myself. This fellow was so depressed when he first got on the stagecoach that he thought perhaps telling a few anecdotes would cheer himself up. So he said to me, well, I can tell you a most laughable thing indeed if you'd like to listen to it. Horace Greeley went over these roads once. And when he was leaving Carson City, he told the driver, Hank Monk, that he had an engagement to lecture at Placerville and was very anxious to get through quick. Well, Hank Monk cracked his whip and started off at an awful pace. The coach bounced up and down in such a terrific way that it jolted the buttons off of old Horace's coat and finally shot his head clean through the roof of the stage. Well, then Horace Greeley yelled at Hank Monk and begged him to go easier. Said he weren't in as much a hurry as he was a while ago. But Hank Monk said, keep your seat, Horace. I'll get you there on time. And you betcha he did, too, what was left of him. When we arrived at Fort Bridger, we took on board a cavalry sergeant, a very proper and soldierly person indeed. And from no other gentleman during the whole journey did I gather such a store of concise and well-arranged military information. He also told me some of his personal problem. He told me that he was traveling to San Francisco to get away from his wife. He told me that he hadn't even talked to her in over 15 years. And I said, my heavens, man, why not? And he said, I didn't want to interrupt her. He said, from the day we got married, all she did was nag me about my drinking. And he told me that he did get drunk every once in a while. And I said, well, you know, I have a little trick that helps me. Whenever I've had all the whiskey that I want to drink, I just ask for sarsaparilla. And he said, yes, but when I've had all the whiskey that I want to drink, I can't say sarsaparilla. This sergeant came home one night from the club at 3 a.m., and there was his house a-weaving and a-waving in the wind. He kept his eye on the front porch. When it came around his way, he made a jump for it. He did the same thing with the front door. Plunged right through and ended at the bottom of the steps. He went up the steps on all fours, and when he got to the top, he tried to stand up, but his foot hitched, and down he went all the way to the bottom and landed on the bottom with his arm wrapped around the newel post. And he just looked up and said, "May God pity the poor sailors out at sea on a night like this."